This is Danaya calling in for a sound check.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can.
What about this one? One, two, three.
That sounds good.
One, two, three, four.
That sounds good.
Hello? Hello?
Sounds good.
How about this one? How's this one sound?
That sounds good.
One, two, three, four.
That sounds good.
One, two, three, four.
That sounds good.
All right, testifier number one.
That sounds good.
And testifier number two.
That sounds good.
How about this one?
That sounds good.
All right, and the last one?
And that sounds good too.
Sweet, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Good evening.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, January 26, 2016, and the time is exactly 6 p.m. This is the House Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Education and Early Development. And with us tonight, we have Representative Ortiz. It's taken me 2 years to get that pronunciation. Representative Keller, myself, Chair, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Quito, and Representative Foster. Today's topics include the Department of Education and Early Development's mission and measures, status of the FY16 budget, an overview of the FY17 budget proposal, DEED's 10-year plan, and before we begin, let me remind members of our current financial predicament, probably don't have to remind them, that we face in the state what we've been talking about for days and will continue. We want to make a big focus of the Finance Committee this year that will be discussing these very budgets as we go on. We want to be sure that we're focusing our resources on our most critical services for the state of Alaska. As the department presents, I'd like the committee to really evaluate each of these programs. One, what requires us to do each of these things, constitution, statute, or regulation? Two, how much do we spend on the program? Three, what are we getting for our money? Could we do it better? Could it be cheaper somewhere way else, more efficiently? Do we need it at all? And how does this item or program impact the department's ability to deliver on its mission? So I'll encourage the members to just let me know if they have got a question, and hopefully, Commissioner, that works for you as we go through it rather than backtracking. And with that, you'll put yourself on the record. We're ready to hear you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mike Hannon, the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development.
Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Education.
And we're prepared to walk through the budget as you suggested. We've got several documents here, but we're also willing to follow your lead as to where you'd like to go next and the places where you'd like to dig in a little further.
Great.
So today we're prepared to do that overview and follow your lead as to where the conversation goes. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Heidi at this time.
Chair Guest, just for clarification, you mentioned first you wanted to go over missions and measures. Is that where you'd like to start?
Please.
Okay.
So we can kind of follow the same agenda. Thank you.
Okay. So the document that you have will look like this, and it has our mission on the top and then the core services and goes through the missions, the measures that we have. So as it says, the mission is to ensure quality standards-based instruction to improve academic achievement to all students. And then we have four core services within the department. First one, distribute public school funding to school districts and other educational institutions.
And for the record, we've been joined by Representative Tallarico. Go ahead.
Our second core service is to provide fiscal accountability, compliance, and oversight. A third one is to develop, implement, and maintain school effectiveness programs. And the fourth one is to maintain active partnerships for pre-K through 20 and lifelong learning. So the pages that follow go through each of the targets that address those core services. I'm happy to entertain questions if people have specific questions on targets.
I'm not seeing any questions, so we'll have a chance to go back and readdress them as we get a little bit more involved in the subcommittee work. So if we don't have any questions, keep going.
Okay. So we don't address anything specifically on the measures. We'll move on to the status of the 16 operating budget. It's a two-page document. At the top, there's a chart that compares FY15 management plan. It looks like this.
Is everybody following? We're kind of moving just a little bit fast for
flipping
pagers. Why don't you show it one more time? There you go. It's got
different documents than you're in.
Representative
Ortiz.
Yeah.
Top line says status of the FY16 operating budget.
All right. Thanks.
Are we all there, good?
We're here.
Okay, great.
The TAP chart shows all funds between our formula and non-formula, comparing FY16 management plan to 16th management plan to 17 governor. Overall, between 15 I will go in the pages following in the next document. I'll go through really the comparison between 16 governor, our 16 management plan is 17 governor, so I'll just focus on 15 comparison for the moment.
Okay.
So the far right column, we're seeing an overall 4% decrease, all funds compared to FY15 management plan. And then for undesignated general funds between formula and non-formula, overall it's an 8.3% decrease from 15 management plan. And you'll note that in our non-formula, which is our agency operations, it's been a 35.1% decrease in the undesignated general funds. Within FY16, we had a number of unallocated reductions we had to take. There was a $674,800 for was part of the $29.8 million branch-wide unallocated reduction, and that was those reductions were taken. $100,000 was taken out of special schools for the Alaska School for the Deaf, and that was a reimbursable service agreement between Health and Social Services and the department. Chair Geddes.
So thank you. So I think you touched on impacts. But how did it impact that program? So if you can kind of walk me through it, walk me through how it impacted that program. So one of the things that we are looking at, if we've cut programs to the extent that they're really not fulfilling the mission anymore, there may be a point that we just say, you know, the program itself just doesn't function anymore. It's time to maybe stop the whole program. So that would be where I'm coming from when I'm asking these questions. We've made some huge reductions. How does it affect the program, and how did the reduction affect the program? And that's kind of what we're thinking in the back of our minds.
And Chair Geddes, for this particular one, we've had a history over the past, I can't tell exactly right now how many years that is, but the Health and Social Service, this is for the residential portion of the Alaska School for the Deaf. They have not spent their full allotment for a number of years. So because of that, we chose to take a reduction because it wasn't being utilized for the purpose of what it was being allocated for.
So it shouldn't have any impact on the program?
It shouldn't,
And this has been a part that's never been spent. At the top end of the budget, so.
And certainly we talked about it. What I'm really hearing you say is there's a residential portion that people weren't staying overnight. They were not living there, therefore. And of course, it begs, what'd you do the other years when people weren't staying? And of course, we know you absorbed it in your budget somewhere else. That being said, I appreciate your honesty in this. But what you're also saying is that program is still intact. We were able to deliver the education. Nobody's going to be staying overnight. Clearly, or staying there because there's not a need.
Correct, Chair Geddes. Their leave in the base grant for the Alaska School for the Deaf for the residential side, $537.4, for them to continue to serve those kids that they need to.
So are we actually stopping the whole residential aspect? Will we just fold that up, or so it's still open? Should we need it at some later date?
Chair Geddes, it is still open.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Fully functional. Another decrease was to the ANSEP, which is the Alaska Native Science Education Engineering Program, Science and Engineering, pardon me, 274.8 reduction. That left 385.2 within their base grant.
So with that same subject in mind, what didn't happen? Who picked up something? Do you know you cut it? So what didn't happen?
ANSEP is one of our active partnerships. They have other sources of funding. I'm sure they had to reduce some of their programs, but they still have $1 million in a grant. It was a 3-year grant. It's the last year of it. They also have other outside funding.
So it didn't knock the knees out. It's still a program. Representative Ortiz.
Can you elaborate a little bit more, remind me, refresh me as to, you have the title of ANSEP, the acronym, what it stands for, but what does it do? What actually happens?
Okay. Through the chair, ANSEP is a program that is operated by the University of Alaska Anchorage. Herb Schroeder is actually here. You might have spoken to him. Their goal has been to reach out to largely the rural population, but to our native students, and find a clear pathway from high schools into the university. And they have several aspects of that. They reach into the eighth grade programs. They've got summer programs in the high school that get kids credits for high school and the university, steer them into high-level math courses so that when they're walking out, they've also already got college credits and they're ready to walk into engineering programs. These kids actually come in far above, oftentimes the same level as sophomores in the engineering programs after they've gone through several aspects of the ANSET program.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
On that topic.
Please, Representative Keller.
Yeah, I know several students that have really benefited. Mm-hmm. They're impressed, but this basically comes to mind. When did this start, just for context? I mean, it's been a long time, right, that they have been functioning, because these kids that I'm talking about are now young adults with families.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I don't know how many years, but quite a while. They started with one student, and they're up to, you know, in the over 1,000 now.
Yeah.
I think it's somewhere in the ballpark of 1,500 students they're going through. They have a wonderful building, actually, on the UAA campus.
Mm-hmm.
Where students go and specifically focus on ANSET.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You bet. Continuing on with the branch-wide unallocated that the department took, there's the early learning coordination, or the $200,000 reduction to parents as teachers, leaving the base grant at $500,000.
Madam Chair.
Representative Keto.
Thank you. Ms. Teschner, can you let me know what that does to the Parents as Teachers program? What were they doing with the additional money, and what will they be able to do with the money that they have left?
Through the chair, Representative Keto, this is another one of our active partnerships, the Parents as Teachers. So over the course of the last year, they simply reduced some of the programs. They work, as you're aware, they work directly with families, providing resources how to best teach children from the home, and their ability to do that outreach was just reduced. I'd have to pull up their, it's not run from the department, it's a partnership that we support. I'd have to pull up their data to see exactly where those funding changes were made.
As a follow-up, if you could provide us with maybe the number of families that were supported and the number of families that will be supported under the FY17 budget, that would be helpful.
Right, and if you'll give it to my office, my staff will give the rest to the folks. Thank you. Good question. Again, we're going to be looking at these programs. You know, have we killed them by the mere fact that we've taken too much out already, and or shall we continue? Is there some service even at that lower level that they can do? So, thank you, Representative Keto.
And Chair Gass, just a reminder, this is what happened last year under the FY16, and we'll move into the 17 very shortly, and you'll see additional conversations around that.
We'll have those. Thanks.
And the last one related to this branch-wide unallocated was a $100,000 decrease in the library operations for the broadband access grants that go to school districts. These funds leverage E-rate funding. So currently under the FY17 budget, because there's an additional reductions to this grant, we're about an 80% prorated for if districts apply as they have been in the past. Districts will get about 80% of the state grant under that program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Keto.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner and Ms. Teschner, I don't recall how much we appropriated for broadband, but do you have an idea of how many communities or schools we were able to connect with the broadband program, and then whether we're going to be able to continue to try and connect or increase the broadband access speed for some of our schools?
To the chair, Representative Keto, we can get that for you. If you remember, 2 years ago, Senator Olson, the goal in a bill that he had, the goal was to get everybody up to 10 megabits, which really is a floor. That's surely a low bar for all of our schools. $5 million would have gotten us there. We were able to get 3.5. That leverages significant amounts. I'll just give you one example of how it leverages E-rate. The Lower Kuskokwim School District allocates about $20 million towards broadband. $2 million of it is state funding. $18 million of it is E-rate funding. So it leverages, it's based on poverty levels.
Mm-hmm.
It leverages significant amounts of federal funding. But we can get you the amount that school districts are using as requested.
Thank you.
Yeah, how many are served? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many, I guess, schools applied for this? Were they all able to get some funding under the $3.4 million level, or 80% of the schools got funding for that? Is there a number?
Through the chair, we were able to get all of those who applied some funding, but it was obviously prorated with the amount that we had to get them up. The goal, again, was 10 megabits. We didn't get everybody up there.
So, Commissioner, when you provide us that information, are you going to provide the leverage if you can? So I certainly think Representative Foster and his area that he represents, the question would be how many of my schools were able to leverage E-rate money, and how well did they do with that, and what are the options moving on? Representative Ortiz.
So, because we didn't get there to that level that you wanted to get there, again, what does that mean? Does it mean that some schools don't have access to any internet? Does it mean that they, do you have any idea what that means when you say we didn't get there to that goal?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, all of our schools have some access. Some of it is still satellite. We still have significant issues. It's still inadequate. A lot of it still doesn't allow for live streaming. So it's a step in the direction of recognizing the need, especially if we're looking at different ways to provide education. That is a tool that is needed in the 21st century. Some would even say it's just a quality of life issue. But we're far from being at a level that is really adequate.
Representative Ortiz.
In those areas where we haven't reached that, would it have impacted the new state testing program and how that was administered and that whole thing?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, we had a couple options for doing our state testing. If we look at those, we provided the option of paper and pencil for those who couldn't do it. If we look at those who did paper and pencil, they were either charter schools or correspondence programs. They weren't the rural areas. So because we were able to do a couple different things, one of it, the biggest one was called local caching. It's basically instead of getting online, this is oversimplified, we give you the testing program, you load it onto your local server, and everybody does the test just locally, and then we upload it.
Okay.
So rather than everybody getting online, it's done that way. And that was able to get all of our schools through the testing.
Okay.
At least broadband wasn't the issue.
Okay. Representative Keller.
Yeah, Madam Chair, on this and the department, if it's possible, when we go, because it looks like there's some interest in this topic, if we could take a half hour maybe and get a some kind of an overview of what the market looks like in the broadband, because it changes so fast. I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were arguing about, 20 megabyte being big, and now 20 gigabytes is big. And there's a lot of people that don't have a dog in the fight that can give us some good information, like the, I'm thinking about the group with the Native Hospital that does the remote
telemedicine.
Yeah, telemedicine computers and that kind of thing. Because I think understanding the market, on what its costs, what the costs are, and what the difficulties are, very briefly for Alaska, is very unique. And I think a snapshot of that would sure help me.
Thank you, Representative Keller, and clearly he and I must live real close to each other because we think alike. We actually have that as part of something moving forward, so great suggestion, because it's something to help us understand, and certainly broadband is part of my colleagues from certainly more rural areas, and they want to know, are they getting the bang for the buck, what other options are available, so we'll be looking at that, and I look forward to comments, so thank you, Representative Keller.
Great point.
Representative Quito.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along the same lines as Representative Ortiz, I think my question really is, were there communities that were unable with broadband access to participate in the AM testing? And what I think I heard you say is all of the communities that desired to were able to, either through caching or other means to administer the tests. Is that correct?
To the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Which will lead us certainly to part of the conversation in our broader kind of review of broadband and what we can and can't do in some of these more rural places, and some of the opportunities with caching and other options versus just live streaming. So, you know, we'll put all that kind of together and we'll talk about it. So continue. Thank you.
The next unallocated reduction we had was a $400,000 to our teaching and learning support division. That was all taken within the student and school achievement component. $200,000 of that went to personal services, where we reduced three PCNs. We actually reduced the funding in 16. Well, actually, you'll see it in the next document that we actually removed the actual PCNs in 17's budget. The other $200,000 went to reduce went to services. And we, as part of a statewide initiative, were asked to go out to back to our contractors and negotiate smaller contract prices. So we were able to do that. And this big chunk of the whole chunk of this plus went towards a reduction to our assessment contract for the Alaska Measures of Progress. We were able to negotiate a reduction in services to reduce the scope and reduce the overall cost. The next unallocated was an $80,400 to the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Within this, we reduced contractual services by $39,600 and grants by $40,800.
And since we'll be looking at that, can you tell me, is there a federal match that without the state match they don't get? I mean, is there this threshold at some given point that we don't get the federal dollars if we, and what is that dollar amount from the state?
It is a one, Chair, it's a one-to-one match.
So every dollar with every federal dollar.
Correct.
So there's no minimum or maximum?
I do not understand the question, sorry.
Is there a minimum dollar that the state has to contribute?
No, it's just as much as we get, it's just one-to-one.
Okay,
sorry.
Thank you.
The final unallocated was a $422,500. To the Alaska Library Museums Division. We hit all three components of that division with this reduction. Our library operations took a 146.4 reduction to personal services, 17.4 to services, and 110 to the broadband grants.
Madam Chair.
Representative Quito, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Teschner, on the talking book library that was outsourced to the Utah State Library,
mm-hmm.
Do we have a cost for that service?
Through the chair, I do not have that on top of my head. You?
I don't have the number off the top of my head. It is a savings to what, you know, definitely a savings by closing that facility in Anchorage and outsourcing it to Utah. But I don't know the exact amount.
Okay, thank you. If I can get that information, or if we could get that
mm-hmm.
information. And the follow-up is, have we seen a reduction in the use of the facility because of that outsourcing, or is the service being used about the same?
And we'll follow up on that as well. We don't have any anticipation that there will be a reduction in service. The number of people, maybe, we'll have to see, but it's not a drop-in type of a place. There are a few patrons that come in there that live in the area,
mm-hmm.
but it's for the visually impaired, and they're usually online or calling in to get books on tape and audio books delivered. And they'll actually get better service, more titles through the university or through the Utah State Library.
Representative Quito.
Thank you. And we had quite a library of talking books in the library.
Mm-hmm.
Did we sell those, or what did we do with those?
Through the chair, those were part of the transfer to Utah.
Oh, thank you.
So they are still part of the program, added to their titles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The next is to the archives component. There was $68,700.
Can we go back up to the, and I must have missed the reduction of the broadband access grants.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess specifically I want to ask, by cutting that money from the broadband access grants, what are we no longer doing?
So as we stated earlier, Chair, it is basically, it's reducing the full amount. So now they're prorated about 80%
okay,
of the full grant.
Yeah. I guess one of the things, and I guess some of us were all in the room in House Bill 278, and I looked at the bill, and it says, if insufficient funding is appropriated to provide funding authorized under the section, the state shall be distributed pro rata to eligible school districts. Are we staying within that statute that we passed?
Mr. Gattis, yes.
Okay. You just, you know, I, you know, with all this amount, do we still have, we're still sharing it equally. Thank you.
So the archives, and so the museum's reductions were $70,000 to personal services, $5,000 to services, and $5,000 to commodities. That's how those unallocated were addressed in 16. No further comments on that document? Okay. We'll move on to our budget overview. So it looks like this. So the FY17 governor's budget on the front. So on page one of that document, it gives you at the top a chart that shows between our K-12 formula programs and our agency operations, which is the non-formula program, between all funding sources. So it's a total of $1.7 billion with all funding sources. And this does include $121 million for the school debt program are included in these numbers. Position counts is a total of 323 full-time positions, 15 part-time, and 6 non-perm for 344 total position counts within the 17 budget. 14% of our total funds is federal, 2% is other, and 84% of that is general funds. That's both undesignated and designated.
Representative Tito.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For clarification, that 84% general funds does include the foundation formula, correct?
That's correct. The chart to the upper on the right of that should say FY17 agency operations by fund source. So just within our agency operations, the non-formula, 12% of that is other funds, 20% is general, and 68% is federal funding. So you can see the majority of what we have for agency is federally funded.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, would just to describe other, if you would, other funds, what they are, 12%. What is it? Characterize it if you can.
The other funds, yes, yeah. Sorry. Through the chair. So that includes interagency receipts, statutory designated program receipts. It also includes the MTAR money, the mental health money, the Alaska Student Loan Corporation receipts, and the Arts and Public Places Fund is also included in there. You're welcome. Just looking at general funds, the chart in the middle, 4% of our general funds goes to our agency operations, and 96% goes out in the K-12 formula program. And by line item, the chart on the bottom, 2% of our entire budget goes for personal services, 3% goes for other, which includes travel, contractual services, and like supplies, and then 95% of that goes out in grants to school districts and other recipients. Moving on to page 2, gives you a snapshot of the 17 budget through each component within the K-12 formula programs and the agency operations by fund source. And as you can see, it also provides you the position count by component within agency operations. Any questions on this page?
I had a couple questions, and maybe you'll queue up some other questions. So my first question would be, in regards to ACPE, are loans still competitive? I mean, is that something, and in fairness, this is kind of more of a statement. I do sit on that board, so, but I really want to kind of bring it out. Are our loans, are student loans competitive at this time? Is that something that we could maybe look at and do something else? I mean, so question, are they competitive?
Chair Gattis, I don't have the recent rates in front of me. Diane Behrens could probably best address that and could really delve into the ACPE component of the budget.
And I guess Representative Keto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Teschner, under the K-12 formula programs, there's an item listed as special schools. Can you describe what that funds?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Keto, what's in there is the funding that goes for the Special Education Services Agency, CESA. You also have under there the Alaska School for the Deaf, Providence Heights School. I believe that there might be one other thing, one other one I'm missing, but that's pretty much what's in there.
Thank you.
And so back to ACPE very quickly, I think you know, we maybe we'll delve into that a little bit deeper with Diane, so I appreciate the answer. Thank you. Representative Keller.
I'm being dense here, I think, but the on the previous page here, we're talking, you've got the governor's 2017. Do those numbers correlate somehow to what we're doing now that I can't put together, or is there going to change? Or I mean, when I look, like I say, I'm probably being dense here, I probably asked the question wrong, but it shows, for example, all funds total 2017 1,629,442, and I'm trying to put that on the page 2 of where you're at. So what am I doing wrong? There's something really obvious here. No,
through the chair, Representative Keller, the difference is the it's about 121 million, and we'll get to that number a little farther. But that's the school debt. We include that in this number that you're seeing on this page, which is not in the other.
Great,
it's in the debt portion of the statewide budget, so it's not in our actual component. So if there's no additional questions on page 2, we'll go to page 3. And this compares the FY17 budget to 16 management plan for general funds. This is designated and undesignated by component. Within the K-12 formula programs, it's an overall 1.8% increase, and majority of that is tied to the foundation program. There is the $50 BSA increase, and there was a fund source change to take an additional funding from the public school trust versus the general fund. And then within the agency operations, there's an overall decrease of 7.1%, and we're seeing a very small 0.4% increase in the overall general fund, both. And I'll get into the increments, decrements in the couple of pages following for the detail. Page 4 shows the comparison, but all funds, total funds. So overall, there is a 1.7% increase from when comparing 17 governors to 15 management plans. And there's a total decrease of 12 positions, 3 full-time positions, and that's within student school achievement, and 9 non-perms, which I'll address momentarily. Page 5 really shows the ins and outs from 16 management plan to 17 governors. And I'll just go line by line, so we can ask questions as we go along.
Thank you.
Line 1 is the unallocated reduction of 329.8. That's to remove the 16 salaries adjustments that were made. Lines 2 through 8 are really technical adjustments for removing the formula programs and putting them back in. Line 9, we're removing one non-perm position within our administrative services unit for it was a long-term non-perm in the program, the position was no longer needed.
I do have a question on that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're removing the position but not putting the money back, right?
Chair Gaddis, this position was actually funded through an RSA from another department. So they were hired to help us get transition from the old accounting system access to the new one, IRIS. So we actually got an RSA and the position was funded through Department of Admin.
Oh, so I have their budget too, so I can talk to them.
Okay,
I think I know where you're going. Okay, thank you.
No problem. Line 10 is removing one non-perm and the associated funding for, this was the funding we got from the one-time item from HB 278 for the prototypical study.
Mm-hmm.
lines 11 and 12 go together, and this is just a net decrease of $25,000 for the mental health trust recommendations for the Autism Resource Center. Line 13 is removing the college and career readiness assessment of $525,000, and this is was the designated general funds. It was in the higher ed fund, and that statute ends at the end of this fiscal year.
So if I might, you know, there are items in the budget that are funded with the higher ed fund. It's going to be a question that comes up, so we might as well approach it right now. What funding source are we planning to use in the future? Are we going to continue this, or where? I guess the and Commissioner kind of knows, we've kind of had this conversation in our heads up meetings, but you know, as we keep funding from this, and maybe it's a bigger conversation with our folks to really understand what the higher ed, what the higher ed fund is and what it's supposed to do, and. You know, if you think that that's something that's a little bit bigger conversation, we're willing to do that here. But I guess we have funding utilizing the higher ed fund this year for next year's budget. Are we going to do it year after year? Is that the thinking?
Representative Gaddis, that was a legislative change last year to put that, so that that funding was originally used for just performance scholarship and Alaska Education
mm-hmm.
Grant,
mm-hmm.
The needs-based component.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any real ownership in whether it sits in the Higher Education Fund or the MGF. As we spoke about at the heads-up meeting, it spends like GF. I don't know that we'll advocate really one way or the other of where those line items sit.
So I think maybe this committee may explore that actual fund and what it's supposed to be used for, what we do use it for, and where we'll go with this, because it's something that I think folks out there are interested in looking at and saying, you know, where are we getting our money? How are we funding education? Very important subject. So we'll let you go on. Thank you.
So line 14 in student school achievement, we're deleting the three vacant positions. We deleted the funding in 16, so now we're getting rid of the actual positions in 17. Line 15 is still within student school achievement, an increase of 31.2 for the Alaska Technical and Vocational Education Program. This is based on a formula from Department of Labor. Line 16 is removing the $25,000 for the Alaska Resource Education Grant. This was formerly known as AMREF. The line 17 is removing the base, this eliminates the base funding for ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, of $385.2. Line 18 is a request for $11 million to, for additional federal receipt of authority to accept we've experienced increases in the child nutrition program. So this will help, it's a reimbursement program, so this will help actual claim, reimbursement of claims from school districts. Line 19 is the early learning coordination, and this is reduction the best beginnings of $320,000 and parents of teachers of $500,000. And then line 20 is the pre-K grant funding of reduction of $2 million. Line 21 is the Alaska State Council on the Arts. This is an $800,000 request for statutory designated program receipts for the Margaret A. Cargo Foundation grant that the Arts Council has received, and it's a multi-year grant. Line 22 is the state facilities rent reduction of $200,000. This was a one-time item for dual occupancy between the estate office building and the new SLAM. Line 23 is library operations. This is a reduction to the broadband funding of $672.7. With this reduction with the other ones we just talked about, that is the 80%. We're still at 80%.
Okay, I was going to ask that again.
Line 24 is museum operations, and this is a request for $136.5 for additional general fund program receipt authority, as we anticipate additional gate receipts, as we call them, emissions to the new state library archives and museums. Line 25 is the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and this is removing a federal grant, the College Access and Challenge Grant, of $1.1 million. The grant ends at the end of FY16, so we're going to remove the authority. Line 26 is still Alaska Commission, and still leading 7 non-firm positions. Line 27 is a request to add interagency receipt authorization of $12.5 million. This is between the commission and the corporation, and this adds a budgeted RSA to the books instead of having it as an unbudgeted. So just half the transaction happened in 16, so this just completes it. Line 28, still Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, there's a $720,000 request for statutory designated program receipts to accept external grants, and that's for research and outreach. And then line 29 is just a fund source change to reflect institutional authorization fees. So a change from other funds to designated general funds. So those are the ins and outs.
Representative Ortiz.
So if I'm not mistaken, some of these programs then were, these school support programs were, you're proposing that we eliminate all funding for them, is that correct?
Yes. And, yeah, well, except for the broadband program, it's eliminating the Alaska Resource Grant, ANSEP-based grant, and Parents of Teachers Best Beginnings, and Pre-K.
And in understanding full well that you're looking at a potential reduction for education support, I get it. I mean, understand these are things that you felt like you needed to do. But how did you prioritize what things to remove and what things to at least continue to try to support?
To the chair, last year we took about a 27% reduction to the budget. We were asked to bring forward another 10%. So look at it, overall about 35%. I know those don't add up.
Well, you know, and I always, when I hear this, the 35%, though, that's not counting the BSA. So in fairness,
right.
No,
35% to the agency. Correct.
I just like people out there to know that education itself did not take a 35% hit.
Okay.
Thank you for saying that. You know, we've done our best to reduce government without reducing our schools. And so the agency is so none of these decisions were easy.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at programs we have left, there really aren't any. I mean, we've removed the programs, all of our active partnerships, basically, from our department. We still have some Head Start funding that leverages about a 4-to-1 with federal money. We still have half of a mentor support for new teachers. There's not a lot left. And so, honestly, I can share with you that at the end of the day, when we worked with OMB and we sat down with the governor and trying to get to that additional few percent, this is what we have left. You know, we can go here or we can go into our schools. And we were advocating for, you know, let's shrink agency as much as possible. And the governor wasn't pleased with it. We weren't pleased with it. And yet the same conversation that,
mm-hmm.
that we're all having now and you're all having is, but what do
sure.
we do?
Sure.
So it's not a philosophical statement. I could go in and say, which was the last man standing, you know, and,
right.
and some of these programs were there, but rock in a hard place. So that's how it came to be prioritizing. There's really, you don't see other programs still in our budget.
Representative Ortiz.
So then, for, I guess, communication honesty with the public or whatever, should we remove the maintain active partnerships from pre-K through 20 lifelong learning as part of our core services? Is that kind of what we should probably do?
To the chair, point well taken. We still have active partnerships with Head Start, and we still have a desire to recognize that the state can't own all this. We need to partner with public and private partnerships, probably more so now than ever before. So we need to find ways to do that. And even if it's not GF, we need to find ways that we can bring in partners, and we need to support those. So philosophically, I think it's still very critical that we do that, more so now, whether it has state money or not. But your point is taken. You know, our active partnerships are diminished to such a point. But I would advocate that we leave it in. The same with pre-K. You know, if that remains as it is, somebody said, well, are you still the Department of Education and Early Development? Well, yes, we are, because we still have a responsibility to support where we can and pursue where we can. So that's a philosophical answer to a fiscal question, probably.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, in regard to the Head Start funding, so can you let us know how many schools are served by the Head Start program currently?
So I think, you know, the question, how many schools, how many kids, and how much money are we leveraging, and how much per kid? So, you know, that kind of goes with that whole...
Sure, we can do that.
It's a bigger question than just the school itself, but how many kids fall under that?
I can tell you that our $7 million state investment leverages about $33 million in federal funding. So pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
And when we invest there in those communities where we're basically helping support where communities don't have the funding to provide their share, we're helping with that, some of our needier communities. And when we do that, we're providing also resources and expectations that they're not only doing their wraparound services, but they're moving kids towards readiness in kindergarten.
So you'll be able to get us those actual details as well?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any additional questions on page 5? We'll move on to page 6. This just gives you, looks at our public school funding program, and just kind of shows you the changes from FY16 authorized to FY17 projected. And at the bottom, you can see the fund sources, and you can see the change between the reduction of $4 million, a little over $4 million to the general fund, and an additional $17 million coming from the public school trust fund.
Representative Quito.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess if you'd let me know, Ms. Teschner, where the projections came from for student population. I guess one of the things that we've been seeing in the news recently are the significant declines in oil prices, but as a result of the decline in oil prices, we're seeing some major companies downsizing in the state, and I guess I'm seeing an increase in students, which is a good thing. I think we need to be able to serve more students, but I'm kind of curious where that information came from.
Through the chair, just so I could clarify, Representative Quito, are you wanting just to see where the changes occurred?
Madam Chair, I think really all I'm trying to find out is where the data sources came from, I guess. So we've got an increase in anticipated student population from FY16 to FY17. Where did we get that increase from? Not specifically located, but what data sources were showing that we're going to see an increase in student population in the state?
And through the chair, we can give you the specifics of that. It's largely based on past history of, you know, enrollment. So what have we seen? Without knowing full well that the reduction in oil prices will probably have an impact on that, we've been using past trends to predict future trends, and we've seen a relatively flat enrollment for the last several years. But your point is the second we can...
All right. Representative Quito, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That actually might have answered my question, because I guess I was curious whether or not the information came from some of the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics information for population in the state, but it sounds like if it's historic, that actually answers my question.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. We'll move on to page 7. And this just shows you by school district what's being projected for the state program allocation. So mostly our formula, K-12 formula programs, and then the school debt reimbursement program. So a total of $1.4 billion going out to school districts projected. there's no questions on that one. Page 8, this information is also reflected on page 7, but this just gives you a little bit more detail by district on the that program. So the $121.9 million program.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tessner. So over the next 5 years, or I guess now 4 years, with the expiration of the debt program, do you have a projection of what the debt obligation will be when the debt program begins again? So right now we're at $120 million obligation for this year. What will that obligation be when the debt program starts again?
Through the chair, we can definitely get you what information we do have projected out. We don't have that with me today.
Thanks.
For the next 5 years, year by year? Great.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
So without looking at, you know, school for school for school, is there any school that's projected to get less of an allotment than they received this year, either because of, I guess the only reason would be because of projected declining enrollment? I would imagine that that would be difficult because the governor's budget does include the $15 addition per student for the BSA, correct?
Correct.
So is it safe to say then that no school district for that allotment will likely see a reduction in their funding from last year if this budget would go forward?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, this is either projected. We actually do counts in October, so we actually screw up with our school districts. If we are off, up, or down, they make their projections, and we make payments based on those right up to October, and then we find out what the actual counts are. We balance it out for the rest of the year. So actual number comes in with the governor's adjusted, and so.
And that's not determined until the October count and all that.
20-day October count, correct.
Okay, thank you.
So just along that line, because I wasn't sure where you're going, and I thought, are there school districts that are obvious declines that you can that you know of? I mean, not just small, but large declines. Significant. Let me use that word. I mean, do we see regions or areas that are significantly losing kids? In possibly areas, I mean, this isn't a trick question, but in areas that are significantly gaining kids.
Chair Gaddis, we can, generally speaking, we're seeing declines in rural Alaska, and we're seeing maintenance or slight gains in urban areas. That's general. We can surely, I can work with our finance director, and we can look for those trends and give you specifics if you'd like. But I think we're generally seeing that pattern.
That's all, you know, I mean, I know the math too is growing, and that's why I said it's not a trick question. I wasn't trying to throw the math too in there.
I will if you like that trick.
But certainly, I guess the trend being is that there are declining populations, and I thought that's where you may have been going.
No, I was just, anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you for your.
You bet.
With no further questions, we'll move on to page 9. And 9 and 10 show a little bit more detail of the funding within the teaching and learning support division. Page 9 goes into the student school achievement component and the different funding that they get, both federal and state and other. And then page 10 goes into the other components within there, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, the State System of Support, Statewide Mentoring Program, Teacher Certification, Child Nutrition, and the Early Learning Coordination. Any questions on those two pages?
I think you might give us a minute just in case we do.
Okay.
Representative Quito.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the statewide mentoring program, do we have a number of how many teachers were able to be mentored with the appropriation from last year?
To the chair, we are still mentoring all new teachers, but what we're seeing is higher caseloads. So mentors are mentoring more teachers a little less time than we have in the past. We're also looking at revamping our mentor program to find maximum efficiencies, doing more communications online, mm-hmm. video teleconferencing and things like that to provide that support. But right now, all of our new teachers are being mentored. I don't know what that number is.
Okay, thank you. That's
okay. Representative Ortiz.
And can you remind me how long, you know, the mentoring program as it's structured now has been in existence, and whether there's been any kind of data or study or anything to determine the effectiveness of that mentoring program?
To the chair, Representative Ortiz, I'd have to go back and look to see how long it's been in place, but we do have some good, strong data. And it's harder now to get new data because we're mentoring all of our new teachers. In the past, when we had some being mentored and some not, we saw the exact data we were looking for over the course of years. We saw teachers staying longer, and we saw students performing better in a classroom who had a new teacher with a mentor as opposed to a classroom that just had a new teacher without a mentor.
Okay.
So higher teacher performance, teachers staying longer, those are the two criteria. Again, it's hard to do a scientific study any longer because we're providing that resource
right.
To everyone. There is one being done in a couple of the major areas through a grant that the university has to do some mentoring, and they're actually looking at some data that should be coming up here in the next year.
Thank you.
Okay. So that will move on to page 11, which just kind of shows what we refer to as the pencil chart, just the increases in the base student allocation from FY07 to FY17 governors. And as stated, it does include the $50 BSA increase. It's in statute. And the last page, there's no questions on that one, is just for an FYI. I know we went over the operating budget, but just our capital budget requests are outlined on page 12. This is an FYI.
Give us a minute. We've got two minutes left here. You can see that we've got some of our folks here with questions. I'm not reading Representative Tito well, so he didn't.
He knows this very well.
I know. That's what I thought. Well, I'm going to pause for a minute just in case.
Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You very much. This is our first subcommittee meeting. You guys did a great job. Certainly we'll be drilling down a little deeper. I look forward for the committee to bring some suggestions, things forward. I met with Representative Ortiz and Quito already. I appreciate that coming forward. Our next meeting will be February 2nd at 6 p.m. And with that, it's a minute till 7, and this meeting is adjourned.